Okay, good afternoon, everybody. We are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas on Wednesday, March 4th, 2020, and we are going to be studying Parshat Tetzaveh, which is the Parsha for this week, and we are going to be focusing on the Choshen of the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, and we're going to see a type of commentary, which is, I thought was very out of the ordinary, very interesting, with a lot of symbolic explanation as to the details of the breastplate. So, we have to start with just looking at the psukim, just to understand the sort of makeup, the design of the breastplate. And then we're going to look at the picture in the back of the chumash, and then we'll go on to the commentary. So let's look at the psukim again. It's page 468 in the Art Scroll Chumash. If you have a different chumash and you're listening or watching, it's Perek Chaf Chet, starting with pasuk Tet Vav, which is 28:15. V'yasita choshen mishpat maase choshev k'maase ifo ta'asenu zahav. You shall make a breastplate of judgment of a woven design, like the craftsmanship of the ephod shall you make it, gold, turquoise, purple, and scarlet wool and linen, twisted together, you shall make it. Ravua yihye, kaful zeret arko v'zeret rachbo. Square shall it be, folded, its length, a half cubit, and its width, a half cubit. Umileta bo miluat even arbaaturim oven. Tor, Odem, Pitita, Uvareket, Hator Echad. You shall fill it with stone mounting, four rows of stone, a row of Odem, Pitita, and Bareket, one row. Vator Hasheni, Nofech, Sapir, V'Yahalom. The second row, Nofech, Sapir, and Yahalom. Vator Hashlishi, Leshem, Shivo, V'Achlama, the stones which were in the third row. And Vator Revi'i, the fourth row, Tarshish, V'Shoham, V'Yashpe, Mishubatzim, Zahav, Yehiyu, B'Milu, Otam. The fourth row, and then set in gold. That's going to be important. We are on page 469.
That's what I thought. Okay,
because set in gold shall they be in their mountings. Okay?
Must have been very heavy to wear.
Must have been, yeah. That's true. Didn't think of that. Ve'ha'avanim tihiyena al shemot b'nei Yisrael. The stone shall be according to the names of the sons of Israel. Shteim esrei al shemotam pituchechotam. 12 according to their names, engraved like a signet ring. Ish al shemo tiyena l'shnei asar shevet. Each according to its name shall they be for the 12 sons, for the 12 tribes. Just to get a visual of what that looks like, if you want to flip to the page, right? And you could see it's very faint, but you see that there's a name of a different shevet on each of the stones. There's a name of a different tribe on each of the, it is in the picture, just very vague. It's hard to see, but it's there. If you look very carefully, you could see. Okay? Now, okay, so that's first of all, you see, so it's three rows, four rows of three stones, okay? And on the name of each shevet is also, on each stone is the name of each shevet. Okay? Yeah.
Consider equal size.
Right.
Also equal,
correct.
Equal,
yeah, that's a good point.
That's why.
Yeah.
The picture, what you pointed out, that shows us that it's not actually square.
Correct. Correct.
It's not square?
Okay.
The picture is square.
Although, well, it says, one second, in the Pasuk, it says, Ravua yiyeh kaful zeret arko v'zeret rachbo. It says it's going to be half a cubit wide and half a cubit long. It does say it's going to be a square.
Yeah.
Right. No. I didn't mean that this one, but over there it says arba in here, right? If you look at Hebrew.
Ravua yihyeh, pasuk tet zayin. Ravua square.
Tet zayin? Ravua.
Square.
Square.
Square. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So now there's a Gemara, fill out the picture before we look at the commentary. There is a Gemara that says that not only is the name of each shevet engraved on each stone, the Gemara says that also the words, the names Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are engraved on the stone, and the word the words Shiftei Yeshurun, the tribes of Yeshurun. If you look at the picture on the first stone, on the Reuven stone, right above Reuven, you see, again, it's very faint. It's engraved Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. On the red, it's very faint, but it's there. And if you look at the last stone, the Binyamin stone, bottom left, it says on the bottom, Shiftei Yeshurun. Okay? So that's according to one opinion, that the name, each stone had one name of a Shevet. On the Reuven stone, it also had Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov.
Only on the
Reuven stone. And on the Binyamin stone, it had Shiftei Yeshurun.
Shiftei Yeshurun? It's not Shiftei Yisrael.
Yeah, Yeshurun is another way that B'nai Yisrael is referred to.
On the last one on the bottom?
Shiftei Yeshurun.
Means the list of the 12 tribes?
No, the word. Shiftei Yeshurun. Just two words. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Creatures.
All right. Now let's turn to the sheet that I gave you.
Yeah.
And we're going to look at the commentary of Rabbeinu Bachya, who has a very different explanation as to the design of the stones. Okay? He says, the English is the English translation on the back. We are on page 1. Second paragraph, you see the years and a little bio of Rabbeinu Bachya. He was from 1255 to 1340.
I lost you.
We're on the sheet now. Okay? So you see on top, there's just a little bit of a bio of him, and now we're on the first Hebrew paragraph.
They describe it, but they don't say the purpose of it.
Well, let's see. So he says first that the Shemot Yudbet Shvatim al Yudbet Avanim, right? The names of each tribe were on the stones. Reuven haya mifutach al Evan Odem, Shimon al Pidita v'chein kulam. He just reviews what the Torah says, that there was one name on each stone, and tells us what each stone was. Umilvad Yudbet Shvatim, and aside from the name of each tribe being on each stone, Shayuk tuvim al Yudbet Avanim halalu, Hayuk tuvim Shemot ha'avot. Also, the names of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, as I see there. Vish Shiftei Yeshurun. And the words Shiftei Yeshurun. Uchaseder hazeh hayuktuvim. And he says, this is the way it was written. Remember, in the picture, it's one shevet per stone. On one stone only is written Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. The first one, Reuven. On the last one, Binyamin, it's written Shiftei Yeshurun. Comes along the Rabbeinu Bachya and says, no, that's not the way it is. Let's look at it. Reuven and the letter Aleph. This is in the sheet. The picture's not going to help because now this is different than the picture. You can follow along with the picture so you get a sense. On the first stone, the Reuven stone, had the word Reuven plus the letter Aleph. It's not in the picture.
No.
Now it's a whole new layout.
Just take his word.
This is a whole new layout.
How much can you put on a little plate like that?
It's just Reuven and letter Aleph. It's less than it's on the picture. Not Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Just the letter Aleph. On Reuven is the word Reuven and just the letter Aleph.
So it was also Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov?
No, just the letter Aleph.
You mean the...
Let's slow down and let's read it. And then after we read it, if you have any questions, we'll ask the questions.
Okay.
On Reuven was the word Reuven and the letter Aleph. On the next stone was the letter Shimon and the letter Bet. On the third stone was the word Levi and the letters Resh, He, Mem. So you see, before, you see between Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, is spelled out Avraham.
Ah.
Okay? Next line. Next line.
And that was on the stone, really.
Yehuda has the word Yehuda and the letter Yud. Yisachar has the word Yisachar and the Tzadi. Zevulun and the Chet. Dan, the Kuf, which spells out between Yehuda, Yisachar, Zevulun, and Dan, Yitzchak. And on top of, in addition, on Dan was also Yud Ayin Kuf, which is the beginning of the word Yaakov. And on the next stone was Naphtali and the letter Bet. So now between Dan and Naphtali, you have Yaakov. Mm-hmm. Then you have the God stone with the word Shiftei. You have the Asher stone with the three first letters of the word Yishurun, Yud, Shin, Resh. And finally, on the Binyamin stone, on the Yosef stone, you had Vav and Nun. Okay?
Which stand for what?
Yishurun. Shiftei Yishurun.
Vav.
Shiftei Yishurun. Yishurun is spelled chaser without the extra vav. Okay. So his view, so we see now two different views. One view is everyone agrees that on every stone was a different name of a shevet, and everyone agrees that on the stones were Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and the words Shiftei Yishurun, the tribes of Jeshurun. What they disagree on is how the names Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov appeared, and how the words Shiftei Yishurun appeared. One view is Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov all were on the Reuven stone. Shiftei Yishurun, both words were on the Binyamin stone. That's one view. His view is that's not the case, as we pointed out. So look at the pattern and see if you could think, if you could figure out a pattern that exists in Rabbeinu Bachya's breakout of the stones. The words and the letters and the words that appear on the stone are bolded. That's the letter of each tribe, and highlighted or sort of grayscale are the letters of the names of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. That represents what was on each stone.
The only difference is that on Binyamin, this Abba
Yichya,
whatever his name is.
Whatever.
Nothing on Binyamin, correct. Correct.
As opposed to the previous.
That's true. Version. That's correct. And what about a pattern? Anyone have a pattern?
The pattern is, no.
What's the, no, a pattern. A pattern.
I don't know. Huh.
There is a pattern.
It's Levi, Dan, God, Asher has more letters.
What's that?
They have repetition. If you go, it's like actually a test for IQ, that what is the pattern.
Right.
Right. They have a repetition of multiple letters, just a single one. Like, for instance, first two names with a single letter. Third name with the three letters.
Three letters.
Then you have three.
Like single letters.
Yeah. And but, then you one.
But what's the pattern?
There's no really.
There's no. It's no repetitive. It's three and then four. There's no pattern.
It's really not.
There is a pattern. The pattern is on each stone.
The pattern is no
there
pattern.
Were on each stone. There were six letters.
On each stone,
there were six letters.
Whoever has a shorter name got.
So on each stone, there were six letters.
I see.
Which explains why Binyamin has nothing extra.
He has six letters.
Because he's six letters. Okay? That's the pattern. The question is, the question is why? I mean, what does this, what's the point, right?
Why did
right? Right. What's the point of this pattern? Okay? So now that we've identified Rabbeinu Bachya's different view of how the words appear, and we've also identified the pattern, let's read his commentary and try to understand why.
Does it have to do with the type of the stone?
No, not according to him. Here we go. Chana, al each even haya shisha otiyot. Shesh otiyot.
If you have a short name,
Reuven is five letters, plus the aleph is six.
Ah, okay.
You add a little more because you have a short name.
Shesh otiyot, not shisha otiyot. Beseder. Okay, good. Here we go. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, second paragraph from the bottom. And if you want to follow along in the English, you could, we are in the English.
Is a translation there?
And the, yeah.
Okay. In the back, I see.
We're, it's not a perfect translation. Harei lecha.
Otiyot is in the form of male here. At that time, historic time of the language.
What do you mean?
Harei lecha bechol even va'even. Shisha otiyot.
Right.
Shesh otiyot.
Ah. Oh, interesting. Okay, interesting. Oh, well, he's writing this in the Middle Ages. So, okay. Harei lecha bechol even ve'even shisha otiyot. So first, he reveals the pattern. On each stone, there were six letters. Lohorot ki sheshet yemei ha'maaseh tuluyim biyud bet shvatim. The first symbolism is that the world depends, right? The creation of the world depends on the shvatim. Depends on the depends on the 12 tribes. Vehayu ba'avnei choshen ayin bet otiyot. So now there were 72 letters total. Ki yud bet pamim shisha heim ayin bet. 12 times 6 is 72. 12 stones. Right, 12 stones. On each stone were 6 letters. 12 times 6 is 72. Veheim keneged ayin bet otiyot shel Hashem Hagadol. The 72 corresponds to the 72 letters in the Shem HaMeforash, the special name, the special gods of God's name. Right, we have it's called the Tetramagram. It's we're not supposed to say it. One of God's names spelled out in 72 letters. Okay? One of God's names.
Is that Kabbalah?
No, we never see it. We never see it. It's never used. It was only used in the Beit HaMikdash, I think, in very limited circumstances. Okay. So we have 72 corresponding to God's special name, which has 72 letters. Lahorot bazeh kiyum ha'olam shenivra ba'ayin bet sha'ot. This is interesting. This is interesting. To correspond to the world which was created in 72 hours. Now, how do you get that the world was created in 72 hours? 72 hours. The world was created in 6 days, which is more than 72 hours. I'm not kicking answers to anyone who cheated and looked ahead in the English.
Oh.
Me?
Shaharei ha'olam nivra bayom, says Rabbeinu Bachya, that the world, the work of creation was only done during the daytime. Shene'emar bayom asot Hashem Elokim eretz u'shamayim. Taking it literally, that on the day, meaning the daylight hours, the 12 hours, v'sheishet mei hamase ayin bet sha'otei. So you have 6 times, times 12.
12 hours in a day.
Right, you get to 72. Okay.
The day and the night.
No. 12 hours. A day is 24 hours.
Night is only 12.
12 hours.
Yeah.
So we created.
And every day they have the same time.
So when Rabbeinu Bachya is saying is when we say the world was created in 6 days, we don't mean 6 24-hour periods. Right. We mean 6 12-hour periods.
Was he a Kabbalist, Rabbeinu Bachayai?
I don't think so.
Reminds me of Kabbalah.
Yeah, the truth is he does talk about Kabbalah, so yes. Okay, here we go. We have more to do here. V'sheishet mei hamaseh ayin bet sha'otim. The 6 days of creation are 72 hours. Yud bet sha'ot b'chol yom, 12 hours per day. V'zeu sh'amar katuv amarti olam chesed yibaneh. The world is built with chesed, k'minyan chesed. Chesed is also 72.
I don't believe.
Okay?
It's gematria stuff.
V'lamadnu mizeh, sha'olam she'nivra ba'ayin bet sha'ot. What do we learn from all this? He puts it all together. That the world that was created in 72 hours, mitkayem b'zchut ha'shvatim, exists in the honor, in the merit of the shvatim, Shebahem ayin bet otiyot, which have in their formulation on the breastplate 72 letters. Okay? Now, he does not talk about the chesed idea, Chana, which I thought he would, which would have been nice to talk about the world depends on chesed, but he does not go down that road. So that's why for him, so he has this tradition that this is the way that the letters the names of the Shvatim were listed on the Ephod, and he has this explanation, and then he gives it this symbolic explanation. And so really what he's saying is that the world, right, depends on the Shvatim, right? The world depends, what does that mean exactly, right? What does that mean that the world depends on the Shvatim? I mean, the Shvatim, of course, represent Am Yisrael, the Jewish people.
It
sounds like it means that the world's existence depends on our continued good works, on chesed, right? Okay. We could put the chesed in here, right? And that the truth is, in his time, I'm not sure if it was easier or harder to recognize this. Because in our time, I was thinking about this, it's very easy for me to understand that the world exists and will only continue to exist depending on how we act. Right? Oh, right? The safety or the future of the planet, right? The future depends on us, right? Depends on how we
behave.
Right? I don't think the Rabbeinu Bachya meant this to be sort of an environmental idea, but I think that's what I thought about it. When I say that the world depends on the Shiftei, what does that mean? The world depends on us. The world depends on us. Meaning, if the world's going to exist and going to be healthy and safe, it's going to depend on what we do here. Now, in his time, it probably had a more mystical connotation, meaning that God directly will affect the world based on our mitzvot and based on our averot, right? A very, very clear one-for-one ratio of the future of the world depends on people's virtue. And I'm suggesting in our day and age we could read Rabbeinu Bachya differently. The future of the world is not about necessarily religious virtue, but it's about virtue in general, how we are in the world.
But
so
all what he's saying here really doesn't help us understand the Choshen and the purpose.
So good point. So what Shula is asking is a good point. It doesn't help us understand the Choshen, but I think that's what he's trying to say. Meaning, it's not. The Choshen is symbolic of an idea, meaning the Kohen Gadol is now carrying around with him, literally on his body, like we took having a weight on our shoulders. The Kohen Gadol is literally carrying around with him the idea that if he cannot teach the people to act properly, the world is going to come to an end.
Okay.
I mean, that's the symbolism of it, right? Or every time you see the Kohen Gadol, right, you think,
Remind
me of my responsibility, So he's suggesting that the placement of the letters, the numbers of the letters, has a very symbolic idea in terms of our understanding our responsibility for the future of the world.
Was he a teacher? Was he a mathematician? I mean, not even.
No, this is not like this is not high math. I don't know. It's unclear. It's unclear where he gets the layout from. That I haven't discovered.
The layout
of the letters. Because not everyone lays it out that way. Others, like we said, have Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov on one stone, the word Shiftei Yeshua on another stone. He has another idea. I'm not sure where he got that from. Okay, that's point number one. That's symbolic in the Choshen is that our behavior really matters. And so B'nai Yisrael would see that when they would see the Kohen. That's why the words Shifte Yishurun have to be there. We're all part of this. We all have a responsibility. And the Kohen Gadol recognizes his responsibility to teach, and we recognize our responsibility when we see the Kohen Gadol. And then he makes another great point. If you remember, in the Psukim, it said that the stones were set in gold. Mm-hmm. Okay, if we look back at the Psukim, right, if we look back to Psukim, it was
Zahav.
It was in the psukim that we looked at. Hold on one second.
It's Yud Gimel.
Right, you make settings of gold, right, in 13. Settings of gold. And then it also. Ah, thank you. Mishpatzot Zahav. Okay, so now. He talks about that because if you look at the breastplate, right, you have the cloth is holding the gold frame. The gold frame is holding the stone.
And the stone is holding the letters.
And the stone is holding the letters. That's key, Shula. That's very key. Exactly. Again, the cloth is holding the gold frame. The gold frame is holding the stone, and the stone is holding letters. Now, everyone here who's wearing a ring with, or a necklace or an earring with a precious stone, what's the most important part? What's the most expensive part of the ring?
The stone.
The stone. Meaning the setting is in service of the stone. Right? So we can get a sense of what's more important based on what's holding what. So the letters are the most important.
Okay.
Right? Because you have the gold is holding the stone and the stone is holding the letters. So the letters here become the most important part of this whole piece. So let's look now at Rabbeinu Bachya on the bottom of page 1.
Isn't it only Rabbi Bachya's idea? It's not recognize it where there's letters like that.
Well, Rashi had his idea. Rashi's idea is no more legitimate than Rabbeinu Bachya's, right?
I see.
We don't know. We don't. From the Torah, it's unclear. So there's different traditions of how it was laid out. We don't know for sure. We're going to have to wait for Mashiach to come tell us for sure.
And if we don't look at all those perishim, so what is the basic thing? I mean, what is it, the whole thing?
Well, Rabbeinu Bachya, this is the layout, and this is the symbolism of it.
No, I really need translation for my Hebrew.
Okay, understand. Let's look at Rabbeinu Bachya, bottom of page 1, yeah. On the sheet, because he's going to talk about the settings. V'yesh b'kan hitorut gidola. Bottom, last paragraph of page 1. V'yesh, there's another very lofty idea here. Al ma'alat ha-Torah, on the importance of the Torah. Ki hi yikara mipninim, because it is more valuable than pearls, right? Pninim are pearls. V'chol chafetzim lo yishvuba, and there is nothing that compares to it. Ki, and how do we know this? Ki mipnei sha kesef v'hazahav chemdat bnei adam. People love gold and silver. We all know that. V'avanim hayikarot limala min hazahav. And precious stones are even more valuable, more than gold. Al kain, ba hakatuv l'orer. Therefore, the Torah is coming to teach us something. Ki haTorah ola al kol hakinyanim kulam. That the Torah is above, more important, more precious than all of these other items. Shaharei, how do we know that? Hazahav basis la'avanim. The gold is a setting for the fancy stones. We've already said that the gold is very beloved by people, and the stones are even more beloved by people.
Yeah, that's what
you said. Right, Sharei hazahav basis lavanim hayikarot, vavanim basis lotiot. And after all, the stones, the precious stones, they serve as the foundation, the basis for the letters. V'chein derech lasot basis min hanikle lenichbad, nikla lenichbad. The way a setting of jewelry works is the setting is less valuable, and on top of the setting is something that's more valuable. Right, we go from the kal to the kaved, from the less important to the more important. The imkain, haotiot ikar hakol. Therefore, if the stones are holding the letters, it shows that the stones are the essence, right? The whole point of a ring is to show the stone. What's underneath it is functional. It could be precious too, but it's
but
essentially
compared
to the other. So what's the ikar of the ring? The stone. What's the ikar of the choshen? The letters on the stone. Shebahem nivra ha'olam shekol hakinyanim nimtzeim bo. It's through the Hebrew letters. This is also sort of a Kabbalistic idea that the whole world was created, and the letters, of course, are the letters that make up the Torah. And so the Torah is the most important thing, which is, I think, a really interesting and important idea, because we may be left, and maybe this is what Rabbeinu Bach is trying to deal with, we may be left with the notion, with the belief that we dress the Kohen Gadol up. I mean, if you look at the pictures, it's just beautiful and, mm-hmm. and fancy, and we dress the Kohen Gadol, and we may be left with the impression that that's the most important thing. Right, the way it looks is the most important thing, and that the fancy stones are the most important thing. Rabbeinu Bach is trying to say, no, the Kohen Gadol and this whole dress represents the Torah. That's the most important thing, and that the proof of it is that the stone holds the letters. So when you see again, it depends on how you look at the Big Day Kahuna, how we look at these garments. If we look at them sort of with regular eyes, we see fancy clothes. Rabbeinu Bach is saying, well, we could look at the fanciness and see it's all in the service of the Torah. Everything is in the service. The wealth is in the service of the Torah. That's the way it should be, right? Our wealth too, the things that we have also should be in the service of the Torah. So if you have wrap up these two ideas, it's very beautiful. When you look at the Kohen Gadol, you see a person who's literally carrying the responsibility of the future of the human race on their chest. And it depends on how we behave. And then you realize that the secret is in the Torah, and more important than all of the pomp and circumstance and all of the fancy outfit, right? All of that is in service of the Torah.
Yeah, I was thinking last week or so, but when we read about the Mishkan, and now we're reading about the Big Day Kahuna. I don't know. Isn't it too vain, the whole thing? I mean, we are talking about tzniut, pashtut.
Yes, it's a good question.
And avodat Hashem,
right.
Lo chashuv, doesn't matter how much. But
right.
So why were I here being told to get so...
So someone who's watching on Facebook wants to know the psukim. Miriam, the psukim are Perek Chaf Chet, Psukim Tetvav through Chaf Aleph. Okay, that's 28, 15 through 21. Okay, so Shula's question is a good one. We've talked about this before. I think it's a very good question, meaning we talk about Sniut, not just about how much skin is showing, but Sniut is really about how much attention we want to draw to ourselves,
anava.
Right? A sense of anava, right? A sense of humility, right? I agree 100%. And I think here it could be that when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, God understands that people are impressed by these things. So when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, God knows we're vain, right? So it's a little of a double-edged sword. God wants the kelim and the actual building itself to be beautiful and gold and precious stones, so that when we see it, we sense its importance. We sense its importance. The challenge with that is we don't always realize that, yes, that belongs in that sphere, but it doesn't necessarily belong in every other sphere of our life. So it's a gamble. I think the Torah is taking a gamble. And there has been, you know, historically, a type of pushback against that, right? The move away from fancy shuls, right? To to something more pashut, right? I think your point is a good one, and that answer to me is a meaningful one. That when it comes to the actual Beit HaMikdash itself, the focal point, the single, it's the only thing we have in Judaism, right? It's the single place that has that type of importance. So when it comes to that, we want God recognizes human nature and says, well, if it's fancy, it must be important, right? Which is not necessarily true in the rest, it's not necessarily true, but that's the way we operate. And we have to be careful not to let that attitude permeate every other area of life. I will say one other point. When it comes to Avodat Hashem, when it comes to service of God, we are supposed to dress nicely. Not necessarily fancy, but clean clothes. On Shabbat and Yom Tov, we're supposed, right? On Shabbat and Yom Tov, we're supposed to have separate clothing for Shabbat and Yom Tov. Wear a jacket and a tie for men on Shabbat and Yom Tov, a nice outfit for women on Shabbat and Yom Tov. We're supposed to dress nicely, and Talmidei Chachamim, we're told, are supposed to, everyone should, but especially be clean, right? Because they represent something like the Kohen Gadol. So there's a difference, though, between nice and fancy, and these things are a little bit subjective, but I think that's what's going on here. Okay, everyone, have a wonderful day.
Nice. Totally different than last year.
Excellent.
You remember?
You have to teach me all the stones.
United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas on Wednesday, March 4th.
Because
people are having stones, you know, and they read.
Ishfa.
What is they?
Blesh.